This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, and prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
On today's show, Disney's 10-year promotional deal with McDonald's is almost over, and both companies are breathing a sigh of relief. And the Xbox 360 has gamers drooling, but executives at studios, record labels, and TV networks are reaching for the Pepto. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Stay tuned. It's The Business from National Public Radio. Less dry than a leftover turkey and less soporific, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. It's been an earth-shaking week of news in Hollywood, courtesy of the numbers 0 and 1. That's right, digital technology seems to have finally come into its own. To the horror of Hollywood, it seems to be happening all at once. We start with news that the music industry is seeing stunning increases in downloaded songs. As of last week, Nielsen SoundScan recorded sales of 285 million singles downloaded already this year, compared with 110 million in all of 2004. Thank you, Steve Jobs. Elsewhere in iPod land, the ink had only just dried on Disney's deal with Apple to offer Lost and Desperate Housewives downloads when TiVo crashed the party. In the next few months, users of the name-brand digital recorder will be able to copy TV shows and films from its set-top box to Apple's iPod and Sony's PSP handheld. And why buy when you can download for free? The move has strained TiVo's relations with networks and studios who were hoping to monetize digital distribution, and a few are considering legal action. That kind of backlash couldn't come at a worse time for TiVo, which, despite being worshipped as a god on some Polynesian islands, is actually watching no-name TV recorders eat its lunch. Meanwhile, in other digital studio news, MovieLink, the Hollywood studio's joint venture that offers online downloads of films, has recruited Fox, a longtime holdout. But I don't watch movies on my computer, you say. Why should I care? Because, dear listener, we are rushing headfirst into the long-promised land of a single set-top box, one that will pipe movies, music, games, and the internet into your television. In related news, BitTorrent, the high-tech software often used for illegal downloads of movies and music, announced they'll be going semi-legit. Hollywood's major studios have agreed to explore uses of the technology for legal downloading, and BitTorrent has promised to do what it can to stop the illegal use of its software. Unfortunately, the genie is out of the bottle on this one, and the deal may be a little BitTorrent too little and a little BitTorrent too late. Finally, a dollop of legal trauma to blast you out of your tryptophan haze. Radar magazine reported late last week that the U.S. attorney may soon offer up indictments of certain lawyers who use the services of the now-incarcerated private gumshoe to the stars, Anthony Pelicano. In particular, all of Hollywood is waiting to see what might befall super lawyer and occasional Pelicano employer, Burt Fields. If the indictment from Southern California U.S. Attorney Dan Saunders comes down, we can all forget about Scooter Libby. Many of the cases Pelicano worked on, including the Katzenberg v. Disney fight and Tom Cruise's messy divorce from Nicole Kidman, could be reopened. Now, this is what I call a constitutional crisis. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up next on The Business, McDonald's decade-long promotional deal with Disney is almost at an end, and they're both loving it. In the past few weeks, every McDonald's has been plastered with promotion for Disney's new kid flick, Chicken Little, from posters to paper tray mats to Happy Meals with Chicken Little toys. It seems fast food tie-ins like this one have always been around, but the fact is they're a fairly recent phenomenon. A big part of why they seem so ubiquitous is a deal McDonald's signed with Disney in 1996 that was the envy of fast food chains everywhere. For an unheard-of 10-year period, a lifetime by Hollywood standards, McDonald's would have the exclusive right to push Happy Meals tied to every Disney kid film, and Disney would get promotion in McDonald's 30,000 restaurants worldwide. But the relationship started to sour as Disney's movies started to suck, and McDonald's wore out its welcome. Marissa Marr is a correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. She's been writing about the end of the McDonald's-Disney deal. Marissa Marr, welcome to the business.
Thank you for having me.
For those who don't know a lot about the rather complicated symbiosis between celluloid and hamburger, take us back to 1996 when McDonald's and Disney's deal started. How big a deal was it that 30,000 burger joints got behind every Disney movie?
At the time, Disney was at the top of the animation game with hits like The Lion King. And McDonald's was facing increasing competition from rivals like Burger King. Burger King had just successfully promoted The Lion King, and McDonald's decided that one of the best ways to beat the competition was to lock Disney into a 10-year deal to keep rivals like Burger King out. Mm. Movies, when they work, are a powerful marketing tool. And so by locking Disney into this deal, McDonald's thought that it was going to be benefiting from a series of Lion King-style movies. The deal was pretty broad-ranging as well. It didn't just include movies. It also included television shows and certain theme park events. Mm. And also, McDonald's got to put some of their restaurants in the theme park. So it was quite a broad-ranging deal. What McDonald's didn't anticipate was Disney hitting a cold streak. And not long after its great run with The Lion King and movies like Tarzan, it hit a cold streak. It missed out missed the boat on computer-generated animation, which meant that newcomers like Pixar and DreamWorks quickly overtook Disney in animation. However, McDonald's was obviously still locked into this 10-year deal where they were having to promote Disney flops, and as a result, tensions rose between the two sides, and this year they decided to part ways in an exclusive-style relationship.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems like, since this deal, to be clear, ends actually next year, right?
Yes.
It seems like, though, that there's not a lot of love lost on either side. Disney, I think, had sort of limited flexibility for when it could release its films, and it was sort of locked into, from what I understand, less than favorable rates selling advertising to McDonald's. Is it true that both sides are sort of glad to see it end?
I think both sides felt restricted by the deal in the later years. In the early years, it seemed that it was, you know, a match made in heaven. But as Disney's filmmaking prowess seemed to decline, they both started to find issue with the deal. Disney, for example, complained that the deal gave it very little flexibility in choosing release dates for its movies. Now, that's something that's quite important in the current market, because it's become extremely crowded and studios are often shifting the release dates to avoid competition. However, the deal with McDonald's meant that there was an enormous lead time on any marketing campaign related to Disney movies, especially because of the small toys that they were making for the Happy Meals. McDonald's needed more than a year's notice to put together those Happy Meals. Another problem that Disney felt it had as part of the deal was this idea of it did sell cut-price advertising to McDonald's for the marketing campaigns, and that's something that became particularly significant when Disney's ABC network made a comeback with hit shows like Desperate Housewives and Lost.
Right. I think it's easy to refer to these entities as companies when, in fact, they're really enormously volatile personalities. That Pixar was run by Steve Jobs, Disney run by Michael Eisner, and McDonald's by Jim Skinner. And my sense was, from speaking to people who are familiar with this marketing arrangement, that at least with Pixar and Disney, there was tremendous animosity between Steve Jobs and Michael Eisner, who has now stepped aside. Is it possible that Pixar could leap into the spot that Disney is vacating without any consultation with Disney at all?
It's certainly possible, because McDonald's has been speaking to Pixar directly. As part of the new deal that McDonald's has with DreamWorks, McDonald's is DreamWorks' exclusive fast food partner as part of that deal, but McDonald's has the right to go off and do deals with anyone else.
Mm-hmm. So you won't see DreamWorks movies showing up at Burger King or Taco Bell or any place like that, but you will see the opposite of that, which is to say that only DreamWorks will be dealing with McDonald's.
Exactly.
Okay.
McDonald's has been talking to Pixar about potentially promoting some of their movies at some point. But they have equally been talking to Disney about having some kind of ongoing relationship in some capacity, although it's unclear what that is. I think probably the negotiations that are going on between Disney and Pixar to renew their deal certainly is a factor, and it's probably likely that McDonald's wouldn't decide on what to do until it knew what the future of that deal was.
So what happens next, based on your keen intelligence here? And I don't just mean intellectually. I mean you are monitoring this for a living. What do you anticipate will happen? I mean, will we see a diffusion of marketing through every kind of restaurant, or is this becoming less and less important in an age of internet and an age of downloadable technology and people taking their ads with them, so to speak, rather than, you know, necessarily having to worry about a Happy Meal all the time?
I think deals like these are valuable to advertisers like McDonald's, but particularly in the context of what's happening with more traditional advertising. Advertisers aren't getting the same bang for their buck with traditional routes such as network television advertising because audiences are increasingly fragmenting. One reason why product placement has become more, and that's obviously one reason why product placement has become more popular in movies and television. So I think that we'll still see deals like this. We just won't see the deals, long-term deals like the original Disney-McDonald's deal. That was a decade-long deal, which was, we just won't see that again. The current McDonald's-DreamWorks deal that we see is 2 years, and McDonald's has negotiated a much more flexible deal for itself.
It also seems as though the studios are reluctant to do it, too, because DreamWorks has made a deal with McDonald's, with Denny's, with Krispy Kreme, with NASCAR. It seems like polygamy is the watchword here.
I think studios do want to work with as many advertisers as possible. However, the DreamWorks McDonald's deal is exclusive in the sense that DreamWorks can't work with other fast food chains on the movies that it's agreed to work with McDonald's on. So obviously it is an extremely valuable piece of advertising route or marketing route for them to the extent that they have agreed that exclusivity, whereas the same isn't true on the reverse.
Marissa Maher is a correspondent for The Wall Street Journal covering big, fat media companies. Marissa, thanks for being on The Business.
Thanks very much.
Coming up next on The Business, opening Pandora's Xbox. If you live in a cave, you might not have heard that Microsoft rolled out its biggest, baddest video game console ever last week. One has to imagine that news of young people actually camping outside electronics stores waiting for the new Xbox 360 made Bill Gates grin. But it caused spilkes for movie studio, record label, and TV network executives. Because the more people there are playing video games, the less people there are going to the movies, buying records, or watching TV. And more people are playing video games than ever before. In fact, video game income basically doubled in the last 8 years. The Gaming Industry's Trade Association likes to crow that gaming revenue now equals domestic box office. Chris Kohler is a contributor to Wired Magazine and editor of the blog Game Life. Chris Kohler, welcome to The Business.
Thanks for having me.
So we can't see you, but I imagine your eyes are a little red-rimmed and bloodshot. Tell us why.
Yeah, there's some bags under my eyes right now. I was up pretty late last night. Microsoft launched their new console, the Xbox 360, and of course, gamers from all over the country decided that they had to get in line and stand outside their local Best Buy or Walmart to pick it up as soon as it went on sale. Some of them, the lucky ones, were able to get it at midnight, and the unlucky ones had to wait until the stores opened up at 8, 9, maybe 10 this morning. But I should start out by saying that this happens quite a bit. This happened with the launch of the PlayStation 2, of the first Xbox, of the PSP in March. because in general, at the launch of major consoles, there is a shortage. There are not enough to go around, and so people do need to get in line to be there to ensure themselves one. If you didn't get in line for the Xbox 360, you're going to wait at least a week. You might even be waiting into December or maybe even into 2006 before you can get one.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Xbox 360 itself, there are a if you have a high-definition television set, the Xbox 360 right now is a console that you want to own. Every game is going to be optimized for progressive scan and widescreen, which means that it's going to look better on your high-def set than any other video game console.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you have a broadband internet connection and you like playing games online, the Xbox makes it easier and more enticing than any home console ever before, because you're constantly online. It's a very simple setup process. And even if you're watching a DVD movie on the Xbox, if your friends get online and say, hey, do you want to join us in a game? Or if you have new mail, and you can do both at once. You can watch the DVD while browsing your messages or talking to your friends.
I'm sure that's what Steven Spielberg hoped for, you know, when he makes his movies, is that you check your email and play a game simultaneously. But be that
maybe when I'm watching, you know, Harry Potter for the fourth or fifth time, I don't need to pay so much attention.
I was going
to
say,
it's just on the background, yeah.
Well, I mean, you bring up an interesting point. That is, for a long time, it seemed as though the console was the enemy of the Hollywood studio and the television network, because it was assumed that if this console was on, you were not watching television shows and you were not watching advertising for movies, which is this strikes fear into the hearts of marketing executives everywhere. And now that's sort of changing, isn't it? It seems as though the thing that used to separate you from Hollywood content is now going to connect you to it. And it seems like this is sort of the Swiss Army knife of sorts that's going to sort of unite your living room with content. Is that more or less correct?
What the gaming industry is hoping for is that will eventually become correct. Because right now the gaming industry is kind of like Hollywood's lapdog. It is not a give and take relationship. Historically, it has never been. It is very much about, we're making a movie, who wants to bid on the rights to the game, and who's going to make the best game for us, and who's going to guarantee that it's going to be out exactly a week before it hits theaters. Obviously, the game industry would like it to be more of a give-and-take relationship where they actually work together on a project, and it's not going to happen, essentially, until there is more of a balanced relationship between games and Hollywood as far as content goes.
Should Hollywood be afraid of game companies sort of stealing their customers, or is that something that's not such a big deal anymore as these consoles begin to connect living rooms to the internet and hopefully, in the eyes of studios anyway, websites like MovieLink, which allow you to download movies and so forth?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Every entertainment company should be scared and should be aware of and should not brush aside any other form of entertainment that people can spend money on to kill time. And so, I mean, that is why you're seeing, I think, if anything, of course Hollywood should be worried about the game industry. The game industry should be worried about Hollywood, and they all should be worried about the internet. Because when you can pay Comcast or whoever, you know, $50 a month and get this unending 24/7 broadband pipeline of free music, free movies, free reading material that you will never, ever in your lifetime be able to finish, then that's a huge deal for somebody who's just looking for entertainment. And that is a huge problem for somebody who's offering a $50 video game that might only give you 10 hours of entertainment, or a $10 movie that's only going to give you two.
You're listening to The Business. After a short break, more with Wired Magazine's Chris Kohler about the relationship, or lack thereof, between Hollywood and gaming.
The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and is made possible in part by World Travel BTI. World Travel's high-touch travel services connect people globally through new avenues of communication, technology, and relationship building. WorldTravel.com.
This is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser. Gaming is a billion-dollar business that's growing by leaps and bounds and starting, by some accounts, to cut in on Hollywood's turf. I'm speaking with Chris Kohler, contributor to Wired Magazine and editor of the blog Game Life. Well, the truth is that Nintendo, separate from Microsoft and separate from Sony, they're not part of a big oligarch company with many tentacles,
right,
both in networks and in TV and in music and films, mm-hmm, and motion pictures and so on.
Exactly.
Their strategy is informed by their lack of vertical integration. So that makes me ask you the question, is Nintendo a target for a media company who wants to very quickly get into the living room of these kids out there and make sure that their other content is not being shoved aside in favor of Donkey Kong?
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't the studios or their corporate parents, News Corp and Sony and Disney and so on, why haven't they bought up the gaming companies and sort of taken the tiger by the tail, so to speak, instead of worrying that they're always being pushed aside?
Well, they are absolutely starting to do that. Sumner Redstone, who is the head of Viacom, has bought a controlling interest in Midway Games, and you're starting to see him start to integrate Viacom and Midway and those licenses. And certainly Buena Vista has really been beefing up their interactive division, which used to be called, I think, Disney Interactive. Now they're calling it Buena Vista Games, and making a huge push. They had a big, big booth at the Electronic Entertainment Expo this year. They're partnering with a well-known video game company called Square Enix to do a series called Kingdom Hearts, which is a crossover between Disney characters. There's Mickey Mouse and Aladdin and Pirates of the Caribbean, combined with characters from the popular Final Fantasy video games, which that's going to be a big title for them on the PlayStation 2 next year. So you are seeing that they're catching on. I think maybe a little late, but they're definitely doing it.
Mm-hmm. So let's step back for a moment, or sort of step to the front, as it were, mm-hmm, because from what I should have asked you when we started out was, how big an industry is the video game business compared to the movie business?
Well, in 2004, the video game business was a $7.3 billion business. That had basically doubled since 1996, when it was 3.7. The Entertainment Software Association likes to announce that every year when this happens, because it does go up steadily every year, and they always like to make the announcement that the sales of the video game industry, or the video game industry's total gross sales, have outpaced the total box office receipts for the movie industry, which is true. But it doesn't take into account all the other revenues that the movie industry produces, such as video rentals, DVD sales,
sure,
et cetera.
My Harry Potter T-shirt.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I don't know how old you are, Chris, but I'll tell you how old I am, and you can share with us or not how old you are. But I'm 33, which means that I had in my youth the how should we say this, the fundamental decency to come home from school and park my butt in front of the television and open a bag of heart-stoppingly salty snacks and absorb nothing but mass culture for, 6 hours or so until my parents literally pried it loose from my hands.
Right.
And that was how studios reached kids. They basically put on a commercial for a movie. I saw it and pestered my parents until they relented or chained me in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I went to see a movie. Now, today, there's so much competing for kids, who have tons of discretionary income.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much competing for their attention. That you have these poor guys who start their morning with a glass of Jack Daniels and some Pepto, and they go into the office at the studio trying to figure out how to reach these kids. The obvious question is, are game companies doing anything with movie studios, or probably better phrased, are movie studios doing anything with game companies to sort of advertise their product in different ways with gamers, using consoles or using games or inserting ads into games in some way that would, sort of stanch the bleeding? Is that happening at all, or are gamers totally resistant to that?
We are definitely seeing more games that feature in-game advertisements, as far as, like, if you're running down a corridor shooting things, there'll be a poster on the wall for what have you, or more traditional product placement that like you'd see in movies, that actual products from real life are being, you know, used in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But gamers would definitely be resistant if before you could play a game, you had to sit and watch a movie trailer. I sincerely doubt that they would actually want to do that. But as far as every major movie that comes out, somebody is looking to make the official video game of the movie, and that does build awareness of the film. And in fact, the video game company Ubisoft that made the King Kong game had asked that gaming enthusiast websites hold off on their reviews of the King Kong game until the movie came out, so as to have that coverage there that drives not only the game but the movie as well.
So every day you'll hear someone lament in Hollywood about movie piracy and how it's destroying the business. It's eroding mm-hmm. the pillars of modern society. But you don't hear this a lot about video games. Do video game companies have the same fears and concerns that the movie studios have about piracy? And if so, what are they doing anything together?
They absolutely have those fears, and they are doing things together. If you look at the website for the Entertainment Software Association, you will see, you know, sort of the video game industry coming together. That's the umbrella group for the video game industry, and they'll show how they're fighting piracy. Certainly, a company like Nintendo is very worried about piracy of its older games, which is so easy to do on the internet because the file sizes are so small and because you can get emulators on the computer that will run them. And actually, I had seen cropping up in shopping malls over the past few Christmas seasons these pirated little handheld game joystick things that you plug into your television, and they've got all these Nintendo games programmed onto them that are, the whole thing is highly illegal. So they're not happy about that at all. Certainly Microsoft has had some problems as well with the original Xbox console. It was so easily modified, people were breaking it apart and hacking it so that it would play copies of games, that the Xbox 360, one of the sort of unsung features about it, is that not only is the box like shut up as tightly as Fort Knox, because if you look, you don't see any screw holes on the Xbox 360. You've got to get a bunch of specialty screwdrivers from Radio Shack and some little pieces of metal and plastic to jimmy the thing open. Then once you get in there, it's not just off the shelf PC parts like they built the last one out of. It's all proprietary chips and things like that. So they took massive steps to prevent against piracy. And
sort of a Pandora's Xbox 360.
Basically, yeah. Right. But okay. if you say so, it's your show. But yeah, I mean, every company is extremely worried about it, but it is very difficult to copy a game disc. They take remarkable security precautions and keep those under lock and key. You can't, an independent company cannot go out and make a PlayStation game or make an Xbox game without working directly with Sony or Microsoft to get the security codes. And actually, Sony and Microsoft do all of the disc manufacturing themselves to mm-hmm. keep that stuff as secret as possible.
Are there any lessons that they're learning from how movies get pirated or vice versa?
Do not go with a Universal Media. Do not make your games on something that you can stick into a computer and rip the files off of.
Mm-hmm.
It's always proprietary discs now.
Okay. Chris, thanks so much for being on The Business. We appreciate it.
Thanks. It was great.
And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com, keyword The Business. Free podcasts of The Business are available at kcrw.com or on Apple's iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser. We'll see you next week on The Business.
You've been listening to KCRW's The Business. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including The Treatment, a weekly conversation with some of the most influential and innovative people in movies and popular entertainment, hosted by film critic Elvis Mitchell. Check out the podcast of The Treatment at kcrw.com.